Today is Thursday, December 26th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Hayley Adams-Fitzpatrick in Washington. Coming up, a major healthcare aid emergency leaves the Democratic Republic of Congo.
Since the start of the Ebola epidemic, it has expanded its operations to manage suspected and confirmed cases of the deadly disease.
Also ahead, North Korea has yet to deliver its promised Christmas gift for the United States. And in Somalia, the government hopes new security cameras will prevent terrorist attacks. It's all on today's International Edition. And in our top story, North Korea may not have delivered a so-called Christmas gift to the United States, at least not on Christmas Day. But U.S.-North Korea tensions appear far from resolved as Pyongyang's end-of-year deadline for nuclear talks approaches. VOA's Bill Gallo reports from Seoul.
There was widespread speculation that North Korea might conduct an intercontinental ballistic missile test around the holiday season. That after a North Korean foreign ministry official earlier this month cryptically promised a Christmas gift to the United States. But there were no reported weapons tests Wednesday, and North Korean state media refrained from any major criticism of the United States. The quiet may not last long. North Korea has imposed an end-of-year deadline for the United States to soften its stance on stalled nuclear talks. Two upcoming events on North Korea's domestic political calendar may also help determine North Korea's intentions. Before the end of the year, North Korea's ruling party is set to hold a meeting of senior politicians who could announce far-reaching foreign policy decisions. North Korean leader Kim Jong-un's annual New Year's Day speech will also be closely watched. In a speech last year, Kim threatened to take his country a new way if nuclear talks remain stalled. Among the more provocative options that Kim could announce, according to analysts, a suspension or termination of negotiations with the U.S., or the resumption of long-range missile or nuclear tests. North Korea has for weeks signaled preparations for a major missile launch. In late November, North Korea warned of a real ballistic missile test under the nose of Japan. In December, it conducted two engine tests, apparently for long-range rockets. North Korea's ambassador to the United Nations earlier this month declared that denuclearization is off the negotiating table and that talks with the United States are no longer needed. Bill Gallo, VOA News, Seoul.
Riot police stormed into shopping malls for a third day of Christmas protests in Hong Kong on Thursday and detained a number of people after masked protesters roamed through shops disrupting business. Their actions were part of the six-month anti-government movement to pressure authorities to meet their demands. They include universal suffrage and an independent investigation into what protesters say has been police brutality. The anti-government movement in Hong Kong, sparked by a controversial extradition law, is showing no signs of abating. Journalist Verna Yu is in Hong Kong and she spoke with VOA's Kate Pound Dawson about the latest protests.
The current wave of protests started on Christmas Eve. While they are in smaller scale, i.e. they've been happening in various locations in Hong Kong, mainly in shopping centres and shopping districts, there has been a break for several weeks when we had relative calm compared with mid-November. And this time, people were responding to online calls for shopping protests. And the intention of the protesters is to make a scene and make a point through the shopping malls. They were chanting slogans such as Liberate Hong Kong, Revolution of Our Time. And they were calling for an independent investigation into police brutality throughout the past 6 months in the anti-government protests. They are smaller scale protests than some of the really huge ones. This time, people want to make the point to say that we're trying to hurt the business scene in Hong Kong. Because Christmas time is traditionally a time when local businesses, hotels, shops are making lots of money.
What has been the economic effect of these protests then?
They really have kind of caused a lot of disruption to shoppers, because yesterday on Christmas Day and also the day before Christmas Eve, there were a lot of protesters in Mong Kok, and then police threw tear gas and severely beat protesters and passers-by. And really, a lot of the shops closed early, and we saw a similar pattern across in Hong Kong, in Causeway Bay and also Kowloon Bay as well. Today, we also saw police rushing into some of the shopping malls after mass protesters roamed through the malls shouting slogans. Really, I think for a lot of the shoppers, it's a pretty off-putting experience. And for the shops themselves, I mean, a lot of them simply have to close early. So I think this is wreaking some sort of havoc in Hong Kong.
Now, are more protests expected this week over this holiday period?
There's an organized protest on New Year Day, January the 1st. And this one has been organized by a local group called Civil Human Rights Front, and they have applied for a permit from the police. So, yes, we are expecting another big one. But the difference between that one and the ones we saw in the past few days is that the one that's been organized by this group is expecting a large turnout if they get police permission. Usually they attract the more peaceful crowd, including old people and families with young children, whereas in the past few days, these informal protests that kind of sprung up here and there and everywhere tend to be kind of joined by a younger, more militant type of protesters.
And that was Verna Yu in Hong Kong, speaking there with VOA's Kate Pound-Dawson. The United Nations says the war in Afghanistan has caused more than 100,000 civilian casualties in the past 10 years. The UN is urging all warring sides to take concrete steps towards ending the 18-year-old hostilities. The head of the UN assistance mission in Afghanistan, Tadamichi Yamamoto, says a reduction in the levels of violence will help create an environment for intra-Afghan negotiations to find a political settlement to the war. The UN statement comes as Taliban insurgents launched a pre-dawn attack in the northern Balkh province Thursday, killing at least 10 Afghan soldiers. Insurgents have stepped up battlefield attacks in northern Afghanistan province recently. The U.S. is trying to negotiate an agreement with the Taliban to end the war, but the insurgent group won't commit to a nationwide ceasefire or take part in intra-Afghan negotiations unless Washington agrees to withdraw all U.S. and coalition troops from Afghanistan. Turkey's president on Thursday said the United Nations-supported government in Libya has asked Ankara to send troops to Tripoli to defend the city from rival forces.
Biz davet edildiğimiz yere gideriz.
As officials of his ruling party applauded, President Recep Tayyip Erdogan said, "We would go to a place where we are invited to go, but we would not go to a place where we are not invited to go. At the moment, since there is such an invitation, we will respond to it." He said lawmakers could vote on the plan next week. For months, Libya's internationally recognized government of national accord has been fending General Khalifa Haftar's forces in eastern Libya. Haftar has the support of Russia, Egypt and the United Arab Emirates, so Erdogan's proposal could bring new stresses to diplomatic efforts to end the fighting. The country has been riven by civil war since longtime ruler Muammar Gaddafi was forced out of power and killed in 2011. Medical aid groups Doctors Without Borders say it has stopped Ebola prevention operations and other services in a town in Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo because the presence of armed government forces in several facilities. Operations have stopped in the town of Biakato and Ituri province just north of Kivu. Both provinces are struggling to control the epidemic. Lisa Schlein reports for us from Geneva.
MSF, known as Doctors Without Borders, says it had no choice. The group says it had to leave Biakato because the presence of military troops inside its health facilities goes against its principles of neutrality and impartiality. The deputy program manager for emergencies programs, Trish Newport, tells VOA the problem surfaced at the end of November, following attacks by armed groups. Three Ebola responders were killed and many others were injured. In the wake of the violence, she says the government in Kinshasa sent security forces to the area to protect the Ebola operation. Newport says she understands the need to protect civilians and medical personnel, but she notes the presence of the armed government forces discourages people from seeking medical care.
There are people that would not go to a healthcare facility because they're afraid of armed forces, because they have a different history with armed forces. And we have always said that healthcare facilities should not be armed. There should not be armed people within them. And people should be able to have access to healthcare facilities that are neutral.
Doctors Without Borders has been working in Biakato since 2016, supporting the Ministry of Health. Initially, its activities were focused on assisting victims of sexual violence. Since the start of the Ebola epidemic, it has expanded its operations to manage suspected and confirmed cases of the deadly disease. Over the past 3 years, Newport says Doctors Without Borders has built a strong, trusting relationship with the community. So the decision to close the operation was very difficult to make.
Biakato was really a place that we worked very closely with the community, and we weren't just focusing on Ebola. We really listened to the community, asking them what their priorities were. For instance, the community said at one point, we don't understand why you just respond to Ebola. We don't even have access to water here. And so we worked with the community to build wells in the community so that they did have access. What we were also doing was providing primary health care, providing pediatric hospital care.
Newport says MSF's departure is permanent. She says the organization's 18-bed Ebola treatment center and all other health activities will continue to be run by the health ministry. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
You're listening to VOA's International Edition.
What's going on, Africa? This is Jackson Vunganyi coming to you from the Voice of America studios here in Washington, D.C. Join us each week on Upfront as we discuss a range of topics. The show tries to capture that fundamentally aspirational nature of today's African youth. As you've noticed, right here on the show, we talk about everything. Nothing is off the table.
Eliminate the mentality that girls cannot do what boys can do.
You basically need to go to school. There's just no way you're going to get all the skills that people want from you or they expect from you if you're not at school.
I am a social networker, often online. For me, it's all about making connections, meeting people.
Can't AU, African Union, can these people really solve this nonsense of rigging election, brutality during what election violence, all this whatever?
Remember to connect with us on Facebook and on Twitter at Upfront Africa.
Hi, my name is Larry London. Tune in on January 3rd at 1500 Universal for an interesting program on border crossings featuring the songs With Time in the title. It's the new year, 2020 is here, and we'll be playing songs from Michael Jackson, Ariana Grande, Justin Bieber, all the hits with the word time in the title. See you at 1500 Universal on January 3rd, right here on Border Crossings.
And you're listening to International Edition on The Voice of America. I'm Heidi Adams Fitzpatrick. Authorities in Somalia have installed security cameras on major roads in the capital, Mogadishu, in an effort to deter ongoing attacks by the Islamist militant group Al-Shabaab. Residents and business owners have welcomed the stepped-up security, but as Mohammed Sheikh Noor reports from Mogadishu, some analysts doubt the cameras will be enough to stop the attacks.
This month, Somali authorities began installing security cameras on some of Mogadishu's major roads like the Makkah al-Mukarramah, which leads to the presidential palace. Abdullahi Farah, director of policy and legal affairs at the Ministry of Security, says the closed-circuit television cameras mounted at key intersections are meant to deter frequent attacks by the Al-Shabaab terrorist group. Farah says the security cameras will reduce criminal activities and prevent Al-Shabaab from carrying out attacks. He says these surveillance cameras will reduce the terrorist attacks. They will deter them from carrying out attacks because the cameras are tracking them. Therefore, he says our people are quite happy about the move and deem it a step forward. Mogadishu residents and business owners have welcomed the cameras in the city's business center, which the Islamist militants often target. Business owner Deqa Salad is one of those who think the cameras will make a difference. She says these cameras deter anyone from committing a crime. Even ordinary thieves avoid cameras like this, she says, because they're afraid to be caught on camera. But political analyst Hassan Barisi says the cameras will only deter terrorists who fear getting caught, not suicide bombers who were told that if they kill, they will be rewarded in the afterlife.
But the others who have been seriously brainwashed or heavily indoctrinated ones will not be avoiding anything, because in the end of the day, they think that they will go to heaven.
Barisi adds the cameras themselves will need security, as Al-Shabaab is likely to target them for destruction. The terrorist group in May ordered Mogadishu businesses with cameras to remove them or else they would attack. Ibrahim Haji, director of communications at the Ministry of Defense, says authorities will closely monitor the new security cameras.
A
special team is manning this system, which the government established, he says. He says he does not want to go into details as it is a sensitive matter. To further deter the Islamist militants, Somali authorities say they are also training and deploying more police and intelligence officers in the capital. Mohamed Sheikh Noor for VOA News, Mogadishu.
The Philippines is grappling with the aftermath of a deadly typhoon that hit the central part of the country on Christmas Day. Typhoon Panfon packed winds of around 120 kilometers per hour, toppling electricity pylons, tearing off roofs and dumping heavy rains for 2 days. Panfon caused widespread travel disruption over the business Christmas period in the mainly Catholic country. Karen Chamas with the Associated Press has more.
A typhoon that barreled through the central Philippines over Christmas left over a dozen people dead and forced thousands to flee their homes. Typhoon Panfon made landfall on Christmas Eve and hit several of the Philippines' Visayan Islands on Christmas Day in the predominantly Catholic country. It brought heavy rains, strong winds and flash floods that caused thousands to evacuate their homes and left thousands more stranded in ports around the country. Meteorologists have reported that Panfon weakened slightly on its way towards the South China Sea with maximum sustained winds of up to 75 miles per hour. I'm Karen Chamas.
On Thursday, Thailand and Indonesia marked the 15th anniversary of one of history's worst natural disasters, the Indian Ocean tsunami. Shortly before 8 a.m. on December 26, 2004, a magnitude 9.1 earthquake struck under the sea in northern Indonesia. That quake sparked a massive tsunami, which killed about 230,000 people in a dozen countries as far away as East Africa. Indonesia's Aceh province, which was closest to the earthquake, was hit hardest. More than 170,000 people died in Indonesia alone. On Thursday, survivors and others attended memorial ceremonies. Mourners placed flowers at the mass graves of victims in Banda Aceh. Shops were closed, boats were not allowed to sail, and flags were flown at half-staff throughout Aceh. In Thailand, a ceremony was held at Ba Nam Ken, a fishing village that lost thousands of people when the waves rolled in. More than 8,000 people died in Thailand or went missing in the disaster. Moving back to the United States, 2019 began with cheers at the U.S. Capitol as a record number of women, as well as ethnic and religious minority members, were sworn in as lawmakers. But as 435 representatives and 100 senators got down to work, polarized politics regularly stalled progress in the politically divided Congress, which ended the year consumed by the impeachment of President Donald Trump. VOA's Carolyn Pursuti reports that even with impeachment proceedings, Congress ended this year with a sudden flurry of significant legislative action.
The year 2019 started, or maybe we should say stalled, for Congress with a government shutdown. It lasted a record 35 days, shocking new legislators, like California Democrat Katie Porter, who got a crash course in Washington politics.
There was no warm-up period. We arrived on January 3rd. We were sworn in, and within a matter of hours, we were voting on bills to reopen the government.
But the government would stay closed until late January, delaying the president's annual State of the Union address until February.
We can bridge old divisions, heal old wounds, build new coalitions.
That sentiment rarely proves true when one party, in this case the Democrats, holds the majority in the House, and the other party, the Republicans, holds the majority in the Senate. Capri Cofaro is a former Ohio State senator, now a college professor, who spoke to VOA on Skype.
Everybody's pointing the finger at the other person, and what we're seeing as a result is gridlock and not a whole lot of movement in regards to policy matters that I think Americans were hoping to see move.
Through mid-December, for all of 2019, Congress passed 90 bills that became law, logging one of the least productive years in modern history. Of the total, many dealt with minor matters, like renaming U.S. post offices or routine government operations.
As the Lucas Lowe Memorial Post Office.
Stalled this year were bills on immigration, health care, and, again, Stephen Billett.
The fact that they're sitting there and not moving is reflective of the differences in philosophy. And again, the divisions that we see in this country manifest themselves in our Congress. And of course, everybody has their eyes on the next election.
Gridlock is not new to Capitol Hill and typically worsens as elections draw near. Even so, Congress recently engineered a notable exception. Amid all the distractions of the House's impeachment hearings targeting President Trump,
no president is supposed to be a dictator in the United States.
Congressional leaders negotiated an agreement with the White House to pass the USMCA, a massive trade deal between the United States, Mexico, and Canada. Michelle Swerz teaches at Georgetown University.
He is still the president, and if you want to move policy, you have to work with the president. So politicians are able to compartmentalize, maybe easier than other people, and they know that they need to move this legislation forward. Because
stalled this year were bills on immigration, health care, and
probably something on gun control.
Several international bills did become law, including a bill promoting human rights and self-determination in Hong Kong, prompting House Speaker Nancy Pelosi to say,
"We're grateful that the president has signed that legislation."
Another law prohibits the sale of military equipment to the Hong Kong Police Department. Additionally, the Uyghur Human Rights Act passed both chambers and is awaiting the president's signature. New Jersey Republican Chris Smith.
Though the cultural genocide and the atrocities suffered by the Uyghurs and others in China.
Efforts to prohibit the sale of military equipment to Saudi Arabia, the United Arab Emirates, England, France, Spain, and Italy all failed due to presidential vetoes, as did an effort to end America's involvement in Saudi Arabia's military campaign in Yemen. Analysts say if big-ticket items stalled in Congress this past year, the outlook for 2020 is even grimmer, as Washington sets its sights on the November elections. Carolyn Pursuti, VOA News at the U.S. Capitol.
And you've been listening to International Edition. You can find us at voanews.com. Thank you so much for joining us. Thank you also to our director, Nadia Taha, and our engineer, Joe Gill. I'm Haiti Adams-Fitzpatrick in Washington. Do enjoy the rest of your day, and thank you for choosing the Voice of America.